Oh wait. How are we at quorum yet, Crown?
1, 2, 3. We don't have any excused absences, so actually we need another person.
One more person, okay. Who else do we have on
We're
there?
missing Laura and Juba.
Anybody in
Okay.
reply say they can't make it?
Is Juba expected to join?
I haven't got an RSVP or an excuse. Charles, we're still working with to kind of figure out like a better tech issue to kind of help Charles actually use his computer. And I haven't heard from Laura.
Okay. I guess then, Richard, how do you feel?
Well, what does lack of quorum stop us from doing? We can't discuss anything.
We can't
Well,
vote.
just can't vote. So, like on the agendas and everything.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, but we
We
would
can't. Sorry.
we would be able to hear from Stephen and just quick discussions on the caller and the needs assessments, right?
Just a couple updates.
Yeah, so basically that's what this meeting was going to be about anyways, kind of a quick one, right?
Yeah, just go
Leah's
ahead.
here.
And so I'm good with proceeding if everyone else is, and just get touch these things out. Welcome everyone. I'm one of the co-chairs with Derek Mapp. Today's the day I'm going to lead. So we can start with some introductions of welcome. My name is Richard. I'm a co-chair and council co-chair. I'll pass it to Maria.
Hello, I'm Maria Lacayo, and I'm with DPH HIV Health Services. And
Thank you,
I'll
Maria.
pass. Oh, you go ahead.
Stephen.
Thank you. Hi, Stephen Spano, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel, he, him, or they, them pronouns, and I'll pass it to Derek.
Hi, I'm Derek Mapp, and I'm one of the co-chairs of this meeting and a member of the council, and I'll pass it to Kira.
Hi everyone, Kira, council staff. And I'll, oops, sorry, I'll pass it to Crown.
Hi everybody, David Crown, council staff. Did anybody not go yet? Sorry, I was looking somewhere
Yeah,
else.
don't forget about me. Hello.
No, Google Lee.
I was just messaging you. Hi,
There we
Lee.
go. I'm here. Lee Joel, council member.
Okay, thank you everyone and welcome. We're not going to review or approve today's agenda, right? With vote or
We can take
September.
a look at
I
it
think
if
we
you'd
can do
like.
that.
Yeah. If you'd like to take a look at today's agenda, if you want to put that up for
Let me
me,
pull that up.
for us.
Yoink.
All right. Can everyone see that?
Yep.
All right. We have reviewing the agenda. We can look over the minutes. If you'd like, then some announcements, public comment, the HCAP report from Stephen. Then we'll get some updates around need assessment and COLAs, and that'll take us to the end of the meeting. So really short today.
Thank you, Kira. And if we wanted to look at September's draft minutes,
All right, here are the draft minutes from last month. We had the HCAP report as usual. We did do resource allocation last month. So there were a couple of motions there. And then the regular updates for the assessment and COLA, and that was the end of our meeting.
Thank you, Kira. Are there any announcements? Anyone have any announcements?
I'll make an announcement. It's more agency related. I don't know if anybody on here would be interested, but we have a long weekend retreat happening with my coworker Greg Kaz, and it's called Honoring Our Experience. It's from October 20th to the 22nd up in Saratoga Springs. Get in contact with me if you're interested in going. It is a workshop, but it's also a good time with a bunch of folks and lovely weather out in the country.
Thank you, Derek.
This is Lee. I have to leave by 4 if we're not done by then.
Okay, Lee. It looks like we're going to be well under that, or at least. Thank you, though. Okay, any public comment? No. And so, Stephen, yes.
I'm sorry, I skipped on the announcement, but I did want to let folks know, and I still need to check in with Mark Molnar, but there is going to be, I'll be inviting the folks from the council staff. There's going to be a happy hour celebrating Bill Hirsch at the Pilsner Inn on Church on the 16th of, no, I'm sorry, the 6th of November. It's a Monday night. I'll send an invite out to council staff so they can disseminate it to the council. Just an informal thing to raise a glass to Bill before he leaves for his vacation and ultimately leaves the agency.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stephen.
Of course, yeah.
I wanted to just say one quick announcement. I realize that maybe not everyone knows there's a workforce development appreciation event that is being put on by Shanti and I think just other frontline organizing group people, and it's on Thursday, October 12th, and I can put it in the chat at Bisat Baobab Restaurant from 5:30 to 7:30. So if people want to join, there's going to be other, I guess, employees from different HIV, HCV, and STI work sites.
Thanks, Maria. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, Stephen, you're up with the HCAP, if you're ready.
Yeah, thank you so much. So, as usual, I'll highlight a few examples that of work that I did this week, and then I'll answer any questions or review anything that folks need to or want to know more about. So the first is 2023-56, which is on the first page there. So this is interesting, and I highlight it because I think it it illustrates something that's pretty unusual for lawyers. When it happens, it's always kind of interesting to have, you know, other parties that you have, you know, been on the other side of the table from making referrals to you. It feels really good when, you know, folks trust you enough to send folks your way. This is a case where I was actually called by the housing service provider. And this is not the first call that I've had like this in the last couple of weeks. The only one where it was an actual client and a client that I could connect with because I'd known them already. But, you know, when I get called by a service provider, it does pose a unique issue because oftentimes the service provider is trying to coordinate care in a manner that, you know, is less formal and less adversarial than other methods. So it's in the spirit of HCAP, but it does pose a unique issue for me because in theory, I would be supporting the client, right? And without knowing the client's wishes on a matter, it's kind of hard for me to offer support to the service provider without having the client's voice. And so in instances like that, you know, what I was able to do in this instance was it was a client that I knew and actually had trouble reaching, but ran into them in the community and checked in and just said, hey, you know, I heard from such and such and I wanted to check in. Is, you know, how's everything going? Do we need to speak more? I shared, you know, some of the dangers of this going further and offered a little bit of information how I would support if the client wanted to connect me. They ultimately have not checked back in with me about that. But I will check in periodically. It's just kind of an unfortunate thing when it's like the service provider is on board to kind of work through an issue in an informal way. And the client is the one that's hesitant to kind of engage. And so I wanted to just illustrate that because it's a unique issue. It's not entirely unique, but it is rare to come up. The next one I'll suggest to talk about is 2023-61, which I think is on the next page. It's on the next page at the top. So this is a client that contacted me initially because they were experiencing issues swallowing. And they were having trouble getting connected to a specialist to kind of diagnose that and see what treatment was available. And in the meantime, they had lost over 40 pounds in like less than 2 months. So, you know, that's kind of indicative of wasting. It's very dangerous. And it's, I think, going to be a much bigger issue as folks continue to age with HIV. It's not the first issue that I've seen like this. We are fortunate that the food service providers here are able to provide some level of support for folks who have trouble swallowing. They can blend meals or provide pureed meals. That is not a guarantee. They have to utilize their kitchen services, and that winds up getting at capacity. So they can't. They did actually have a wait list, but because of the nature of just because it had been going on for so long and the client was already existing with the organization, they were able to bump them up on the wait list. But, you know, I do want to kind of share that because if something happens where, and the food service provider did say, if the client's meeting with their specialist indicates that they need a dysphagia level diet, which I'm not entirely sure what the cutoff is there, they are not able to provide that support. And I don't know of support that's available through Medi-Cal or other insurances to be able to do that. I know for certain that the food service providers that we work with don't have access to insure. They may every now and again get a case like donated, but when that happens, it's like first come, first served, and it's gone in the first day. So it's definitely going to be a need for some folks, especially as, they become more medically fragile. The next case I'd like to talk about is 2023-35. And, you know, this is an instance, I think it's on page 3. Yeah. So this is an instance where, and kind of ongoing, and I think it's important to highlight because as we kind of maneuver to, there's clearly a lot of benefits to unified systems like MyChart or, other similar Epic. It is not trouble-free for patients. And a lot of the communication doesn't necessarily lend itself to, a patient experience. I think we've all probably, experienced that in our own lives, reaching out. You know, I know for me, like with Kaiser and using their website, it is not hitch-free. It's not always easy to use. I can't, if my phone blocks me out or my face authorization isn't working for some reason, it's a whole other thing. And then I've got to find a password that who knows what it, I mean, it's not an easy process to navigate. And so when in this instance, the client is able to utilize my chart, but they were not receiving information back very quickly or even at all. In some instances, they weren't receiving any response from their providers. So that posed one instance. And then when trying to utilize some alternative, more analog method to reach out to their provider, they were encountering even more barriers. And my conversations with the service provider were such that, look, that's something we totally know about. We know that the voicemails go to empty voicemails. We know that the phone tree system is very difficult. And if anyone needs another example for that, they can look at the 2023-34, which is another example of, I had a law clerk. I have a contact at the billing department within this service provider's agency, but I asked a law clerk to reach out, and they utilized all of their resources, the numbers online, the listings that we had in our database, utilizing every service to try and reach out to a billing department, and has not heard back in months. And so some of the communication just seems to be going into this black hole that exists. And it's very frustrating for clients who have either a really major thing that they need to sort out or something that should be entirely simple and quickly resolved that they can't even get a response on. It's a little bit challenging. I wanted to maybe share some of the my thoughts on it very quickly, because from my standpoint, and I understand what the legal the legal weeds of it is, and the reasons for being, you know, communicative about emergencies and utilizing the emergency services and stuff. But when you have something that is, you know, I don't know, something there's, you know, you can reach out to a service provider for an appointment. And if you don't reach your service provider, you'll get a message that says, go to the emergency room if it's an emergency. But by my estimation, there is a world of medical issues in between needing to arrange an appointment and having to go to the emergency room. And some of the systems that are in place to communicate with service providers really don't make it easy to address those kind of middle ground issues. And they seem to me to be like the largest group of issues that folks are experiencing. So, you know, I'll continue to work with the service provider. I did actually ask them, would it help if I filed a grievance, you know, to this effect so that you could escalate it? They indicated that it was system wide. And they said, yeah, absolutely. So again, like a really helpful reaction from a service provider to be willing to engage in a grievance conversation just for the purpose of, you know, making change within the organization. It's unfortunate it has to go to that level, but that's what it's there for. So with that, I'll leave it to you guys to ask any clarifying questions.
Hi. You know, one of the things that it automatically points to for me is just how impacted the system may actually be in terms of being able to logistically, like capacity level, like respond to folks as an ongoing issue. I know that we've talked about this in, quite a bit in terms of some of the other providers, service providers, but I just sort of think about, it's one of the first thing that comes to my head is just the sort of capacity that our system have in responding to folks at this time. Though it's kind of, it's not that uncommon.
Yeah, it almost seems like I don't know if this is an issue, but it almost seems as though it's like excessive or too speedy growth, like not, you know, something that might work with an, you know, with one thing as an organization expands, there's not, you know, it's kind of like, they're running to the finish line before they, you know, before like, carbo loading the night before or something. You know, I don't know what a great analogy is, but it's like either kind of, it's like almost some of the organizations appear to get too big for their britches too quickly, and the systems that they had in place then have to, like, you know, or there's just some, like, even AORP experienced it when we had to switch to Salesforce, and it's just like there was no discussion of, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about whether the HCAP report was going to be addressed by the system, but we knew we were going to lose functionality ahead of time, and it was kind of just like a casualty of the move. We didn't have a choice. Like, there was no funding available to make it better. There was no, you know, it's just like, this is just how it has to go. We've got to move with the technology or be stuck at 30 years ago. And something's going to get missed. It should not be the clients, you know, if it's right. A reporting issue, I'd rather see the, you know, something like reporting or monitoring, something like that, take the hit on it, then it fall onto the patient's experience. That really shouldn't be the case, or, you know, but I agree. It does indicate potentially a capacity issue. I also see Thomas's hand up.
Well, if welcome, I could, Thomas. If I could, there was one other thing, at least one other thing that I wanted to point out, and that is a concern of mine as well. And that is just this idea of, as we continue to look at further cuts into our system, we just did the allocation discussion. And my big concern is, as we continue to get cuts into our system, we're going to see a bit more of this as well. And again, it goes to capacity, like how much can we actually afford to do? I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and you know, at a certain point, it just becomes so burdensome that people, I think ultimately it runs the risk of people falling out of care. At a certain point, I mean, I've already had conversations with folks, and I am always inclined to try to convince them that it's too early to jump to that, you know, but so many folks call me when they're exasperated and they're like, honestly, I'm just about to give up. Like, I just don't even care about this MRI. And I'm like, let's not go there yet. Let me make a couple of phone calls on my end first, you know, but should we need a lawyer to make that call to like get the
right
care that you were referred to? You know, it shouldn't come to that. And I'm not always going to be there to make those calls. And how many people without HIV are dealing with that? You know, how much of it is a product of some other disability for which there's not, you know, some resource like an ombudsman or, you know, so it's actually, I think, does pose a danger of forcing people out of care.
Thank you, Derek. Thomas, welcome to the group, and you have your hand up.
He has all the answers. Thanks. He's going to tell.
Do. The system's broken. on a good day, right? So, Stephen, can I ask, and maybe other members, just so what's your intent in sharing that with us? Like, what would you, is it situational awareness?
Yeah, I mean, I always try to bring some of the most challenging things and repeated issues to the community engagement committee, because I feel like it's the first line of defense for discussion at some of the other levels. Certainly, you know, I mean, I know that we already did our prioritization and things like that, but, you know, an agency, you know, this committee has the ability to bring it to the larger planning council and the other like subcommittees to kind of share what's been going on and see if there can be funding allocated or provide guidelines on best practices. Those are all within the purview of the council to do. And, you know, DPH has been responsive, right? I just don't know, you know, whether there's been enough community push to like make some of the necessary changes, but this is, you know, at least one committee that I can advocate to in order to kind of, you know, encourage that, I hope. Yeah, it's as anything, it's not necessarily to hold anybody accountable. It's to kind of just share what's going on. And, you know, not for nothing, but my predictions over the last 5 years have been pretty accurate. and, you know, these are things I foresee being issues. So it's
me.
So I'm curious, Thomas, just listening to this, what are you thinking? And do you see anywhere that the Planning Council might be able to do any of the recommendations or suggestions that he's talking about?
So I feel like, so I appreciate the question, Lee. I don't, like, this is not my home committee, and I'm not really sure which committee is my own committee, but so I don't want to disrupt the culture, right? And whatever your culture is. And at the same time, so I feel like you as committee members in this space, you have the, you know, there's, in my mind, there's two options. It's like, do we just keep situational awareness around this within this space and we look for the pattern? Or do we elevate? And what elevation looks like can be different things, maybe taking it to the steering or whatever, I don't know. So that would be up to the group to figure out how much energy you all want to commit to it, how much of a pattern do you see. So that my intent is to tell you the truth, to kind of empower you all to kind of hear the information, and then make that assessment for people who have been hearing Stephen's reports for a few moons now, right? You've probably seen the patterns yourselves. And what are your desires? Or it's not like you have to like burn things down, but at the same time, you're like, okay, this is something that we has been sand in the oyster for a while. And let's see what we can do to at least try to elevate it.
So you're welcome at any of our committee meetings, and I would encourage you to come to all of them. So secondly, this is the first that I seem to remember that a client had this level of difficulty, and I could be wrong. I would ask that Stephen keep track of this and keep the committee informed about new and ongoing problems with this issue before we kind of tackle the idea of escalating this to the next level, because I think you're absolutely right. We could issue some recommendations for, you know, providers in terms of how they're providing telehealth to their HIV clients. That would probably be the best way to go, but I want to hear more.
So, Stephen, also, I was thinking along those lines where it's, I don't mean to call it vague right now, but you seem to know what's going on. And this is like the second or third time I've heard you mention this about provider communication channels being difficult and this and that. So maybe you'd like to, in the coming future, like pinpoint where these blockages are and like specific maybe organizations or areas that need to be addressed specifically, like this is where I'm seeing this, or this is what field this happens in, or actually this is an organization that is lacking, or this part of the system is, and maybe address the council or one of these committees with a report on that. So like there would be designated things we could go to and talk to and work on.
So to respond, so first of all, yes, I'm always happy to keep track. It may not be entirely obvious, but that is almost exactly what I do. Anytime I come in and I highlight something, I'm trying to highlight those patterns for you all so that you don't have to slog through years of reports to see them. But the issues that I raise are things that tend to either be, you know, really egregious things that should be addressed by the council, or things that have been happening over a longer period of time. I know that there has been interest in trends, so I always try to indicate those things. I'm not able to, just because it's a conflict of interest, I'm not able to discuss specific organizations. However, the Department of Public Health does get a slightly different copy of the HHS does get a slightly different copy of my report that includes the service provider's names. So if there is a particular issue or case that I highlight when I provide those numbers, DPH will have a corresponding report that has the service provider listed there. So, you know, you all as an agency can kind of decipher those patterns and say, you want to know what? It came up on this one in November, keep on this one September. Steven's been talking about phone trees for a year now. Client's not getting called back. Client's calling him, telling they're done and don't want to deal with it. I am always happy to appear in any of the subcommittee meetings to speak further or share this information from the horse's mouth with the steering committee or the council affairs committee. So you can always ask me to appear. I will make myself available if at all possible. What you're saying is exactly what I try to do. And I do, you know, I try my best to highlight those things that I'm like, you know, when they come across my desk, I'm like, another one? It's like the first thing I do is put it on the community engagement report, because I know it's something that, you know, it's not just for who used this word. I forget who used it. It might have been David Gonzalez or Ben Kabangan way back. But, you know, saying it's not just about our thirst for narrative. The stories tell, the story of a person behind it, you know, and it could be any of us. It could be any one of us on the other end of that story.
I'm also reminded that with the narratives that you create for us, Stephen, that it's good for us to keep in mind as part of the direction when we consider COLAs and focus groups that the Care Council staff can perform to get more information from the community and potential recommendations that's coming up.
Okay. Anything else for Stephen?
Just thank you for your commitment, Stephen, and the information, and I hope you're feeling it's valued in this particular space. I'll just stop there.
No, most certainly. It has yielded results at the council level in the past. I've seen it happen, so I appreciate the space. And I know our clients do sometimes as well. I have clients who decline to file a grievance. They're like, honestly, I'm too tired. I'm too sick.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal. And I say, well, do you know what? Let me do this. Let me at least put it on my report so that I can share it with the community so that they know this is a known issue, because otherwise nobody's going to hear about it. And they say, all right, fine. I don't have to do anything, right? I'm like, yeah, you don't have to do anything. I'll do it.
I've been there though, right? You're just too tired to fight. You're just like, too sick to push back.
Yeah.
And I also, you're kind of like the lightning rod that collects it all. So that is weathering, no pun intended, on you. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, everyone. So with that, I believe we can move on to needs assessment and COLA update.
Yeah, and I can take that one. We do have a couple of updates, so I'll go ahead and get started with the needs assessment first. So Crown and I just completed a focus group this week for our needs assessment, and we had around, I think, a little over 15 participants. So that would bring our total of participants for this needs assessment, which is Latino, Latina, Latinx, to a little over 40 people. So that's really exciting. We still are trying to do one. I think we're going to try to do one more focus group because I know Mark really wants to aim high. So we're going to try to do that. and this is a really good number so far. So as long as we can get more, that's always welcomed. And then in terms of the COLA, which is people affected by eviction, we have a total of 5 participants so far, and we have been doing, we have been trying to do recruitment for participants for that. So we've had a couple of, we've held a couple of days where we've been in the office available to any participants that want to come by. That hasn't been a good, we haven't had a good turnout. So we've only had 5 participants so far. And so I wanted to bring this back to the group to see kind of what the group wanted to do. We were thinking that since we do have other COLAs that we wanted to do, those being Black, African-American, and youth, since those are our target areas for recruitment in the actual group here, that maybe we could just do almost like a joint, when it came time to at the end of the day, like do a joint presentation so we bring all of that information back. But so far we haven't had good turnout for this specific COLA. Crown, Mark, do you guys want to add anything?
It's always tough when you don't have a sort of in-place cohort to reach out to via a particular ongoing support group when it comes to COLAs. So although 5 is a disappointing number, it is what it is, right? You can only do so much as far as trying to get folks in. That means that this will be a fairly quantitatively based information, and that's still important. You know, it's 5 people is not going to be representative of anything really, but it's, you know, these are still 5 voices who we can share what their challenges are. So yeah, that was my suggestion to, you know, let's just package this with another COLA report back, because an entire COLA report back featuring 5 participants might be a little overstated to have a whole agenda item on that.
And yeah, I don't really have exactly much to add, but I kind of want to echo what Stephen dropped in the chat, which is that it did feel really promising at first. It did feel very impactful and insightful when we did get participants, since this feels like a unique target. So just really hoping to find a way to recruit a little bit better or outreach better or something.
This is an ongoing problem too. Sometimes I'm not blaming community engagement or anyone in community engagement, but sometimes when community engagement gets a little bit creative and looks at kind of specificities, there was once like, I think, let's do folks who have been on prep, but then we're not, you know, we know that's like a lot of different people, but how you get those people is a whole different question. And I guess I would just discourage this group in the future from sort of having that kind of high level of specificity and instead maybe choose particular populations, demographics, where there are ongoing places that are actually focused, that are actual groups that we can turn into a focus group. Because we've just found that, like, I think it's like in the past maybe 5-10 years, like maybe the third or the fourth one where we've tried and just have gotten such tiny numbers because of the almost granular specificity. One would think that people experiencing housing challenges and eviction would not be granular, but there's no group of those people who come together on an ongoing basis, and that's just a fact.
Great.
So I think what we ought to be doing whenever we are trying to come up with a new group is to ask council staff specifically, you know, how challenging or easy will it be for us to find these folks, right? So we need to make sure that we're kind of questioning ourselves when we're coming up with the cohorts.
Yeah. Or make it, or in fact, even just look at it in a different way as far as like, you know what, maybe it's a year-long process of we'll just occasionally throw this out there. But yeah, it's different. We should have an expectation of like of a lack of a certain lack of success. I get where people's motivations are. I think Mike Schreiber came up with the other two ones that didn't work out. Like, we want to know specific information about specific things that are very specific to San Francisco, right? And eviction is one of those specific things. But I think, like Lee said, we should really just check in more deeply about, like, but is this possible? Are we going to get even good results?
Lee, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks. I apologize. I'm going to keep my camera off because I've been kind of not feeling well. So quickly, I don't know. Have you all reached out to JP Soto
yes.
at LSS? Okay. And were there flyers put up at his agency?
Yes, we did send over a flyer specifically for this most recent one. Uh-huh. We were able to send one over. I did, when we last spoke to him about, I think, recruitment, he did mention that there was some issue with, because we were trying to do maybe recruitment at the Kinney Hotel. Uh-huh. And so he did mention that there was some sort of, I think it was either a flood or a fire that had just happened. So they weren't able to, they were trying to still deal with that. So he wasn't too hopeful about that happening.
Yeah, I mean, so for those of you who might not be aware with, you know, of the process, basically, when an eviction happens, and I'll try not to take up too much time, I'm sorry. When an eviction happens, and if AORP or an attorney is able to resolve that and keep it from an eviction, typically the defendant will have a list of take care, Thomas. will have a list of stipulations that they have to abide by, including, you know, if the eviction was based on non-payment, then, you know, they'll have to agree to getting money management services so that they can guarantee their rent being paid moving forward. If it's behavioral or something like that, then a connection to mental health support or case management, it will be listed in the stipulation as something that the client will have to do or something that their attorneys will have to you know, advise them on in order to avoid the eviction. And so, like, trying to find those supportive services that support folks who have successfully avoided eviction, in all likelihood, it's not their first time going through it. In a lot of instances, in some instances, it doesn't need to result in an eviction to really have the impact that I think you all are trying to kind of get a better, you know, trying to unpack with this. So I know I haven't been the greatest, short of me providing a list of clients that AORP, you know, has defended evictions for. There's not much more I can do, and that would be a huge violation of several ethical responsibilities. So I can't do that. But the but reaching out to those kind of supportive services, I think, is going to be critical, and it might require a little bit more buy-in. I'm fine, to be honest with you, I think the voice of five folks, to me, I would be surprised if there wasn't some unified voice with those five people. And I think that speaks very loudly, regardless of the numbers. But yeah, I also haven't seen the data. I'm really grateful that you guys even undertook the effort. And if it were to go on for a period of time, I have a feeling that, you know, you'd get more and more participants, but I would understand if you needed to recalibrate.
Yeah, I also wanted to mention that, chime in, and right from the start, this first and foremost, this is an important voice of the eviction, especially in San Francisco and housing. It's really important, and the groups of people that we work with are directly affected by this in a large number. But like Mark and a lot of us are saying, it's hard. It's an elusive group, even though it's large, like the specificity about it. And I think we saw that right from the beginning when we chose this COLA. This wasn't a secret. We were saying right off the top, this might be hard to pin down, but it's worthwhile. And so we knew this going in, that this might be kind of a hard number to pull, but it was a worthwhile topic. And I think that's what we're hearing now. And I like what Stephen just said, and I like what Mark was saying, and Kira and Crown, to keep this around and to continue to try to hear these voices. Let's hear what they have to say. But maybe what Mark, you were saying about mix it in with other COLAs too. Don't let's not abandon this, but let's incorporate it with something else, so it's not just hanging out there on a vine by itself.
Yeah, I was speaking specifically to us presenting to the council. You know, five voices are still five human beings with worthwhile anecdotes, qualitative data, however you want to frame it, to share. And so we'll just discuss internally when to actually close this off officially. But just know that it will be, you know, a COLA presentation on two different topics, like, or maybe all three. Maybe we'll do Kira. Maybe Kira will do a presentation on the results from our Black focus group, our youth focus group, and also our eviction, those facing eviction. You know, just package it together. That's mainly what I was saying, is that we're not going to have this separated out. It won't be combined. It'll be separate, you know, separate slides.
Steven.
Sorry. So just a quick question. Did I understand correctly that you've been kind of doing this? I did get the flyers for the arranged dates for like interviews. I knew that was going to be troublesome for my clients to schedule, and I offered support for the ones that I, you know, and I also, some people were like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that. They seemed really excited. And then obviously it's not likely they followed through. But is it okay, like, if I do get somebody that's interested, is it okay to refer them to you all just for a conversation or a phone call? Or I don't know, maybe there's a, what are the parameters? Does it have to be within that kind of formal time? Or
well, what do you think, Mark?
I think we have an internal conversation to determine that, but having a Kira or Crown do a one-on-one over the phone also is a possibility. You know, it is good to have projects end rather than sort of having them just sort of stay open indefinitely. So I think that's what we have to determine, is like, are we going to end this right now? Are we going to leave it open till the end of the year? Are we going to leave it open till the end of the month? Like, we should determine that, just because, you know, it's onerous on staff to have sort of a free floating project that will come in and out when we actually have to refocus on the two remaining COLAs as well. So fair. I guess my answer to you, Stephen, is that I have no answer for you, Stephen.
No, that's really
other than like, I'll ask that Kira or Crown reach out to you after, like, we've decided internally. And the answer might be, actually, we've decided to close this off.
That's totally fine.
the answer might be, yeah, your person, if you have someone, they have until the end of this month, you know.
The overall arching kind of umbrella question for that question is, you know, can I support in any way? And if there is an answer to that, please just let me know.
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks, Mark. Derek.
Thanks there. And I just wanted to say really quickly, just a bit of a ditto. I like the idea of just sort of closing it off and letting this data be. But I also, have a really strong idea around housing instability, and particularly in San Francisco. If we ever do this, whenever we get back to housing, it's not. I don't think it's going to be an if; it's more of a when. I would much hearing something that you said, Mark. It makes a lot of sense to me to have an open process in which people identify what area of housing instability in which they are currently living in or something like this, so that we get an idea of sort of like the spread of housing instability that's happening for folks in the city. I know that whenever I presented the idea to some of the folks I know that are experiencing housing instability, them looking over the paperwork, they're like, well, I don't think I fit in this. It's not quite where I'm at. And so I know that I think people are self-selecting out rather than selecting in. That's been one of the challenges I face when putting out the information in regards to the focus group. So, I just wanted to put that out there.
I have a couple of thoughts on that one. But first, actually, one thought is a question to Maria. On Aries, when you do your Aries report, is number of years stably housed one of the things that you report on? I don't think so, right? No.
No.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm that before moving back to Derek. So I guess, first of all, Derek, it will be impossible for us to do a needs assessment about sort of the state of housing for positive folks in San Francisco. But what we could do, and I think this is an exciting potential for next year, if you all want to think about this, is a targeted needs assessment that literally targets people's experience with housing. And we'd have to, of course, keep that to Rhine-wide clients. We could even drill down and say within the severe need / special population categories, which means that we'd be reaching out to each of the centers of excellence and saying, hey, do you have support groups? Here's flyers for this. This would be actually a very easy, my opinion would be, this would be very easy on the council end because everyone has some experience with housing, whether someone is marginally housed or they've been stably housed forever. This makes sort of like a target around topic, but not necessarily a target when it comes to demographics. And I think that could be interesting. This committee would have to do some serious work, not serious work like time consuming, but some serious work on the survey tool to make sure that beyond our regular things around, okay, prioritize these services and tell us how you're experiencing services, it has to be much more focused on like, okay, tell us about your housing experience. Like, how long have you been stably housed? Have you been under the threat of eviction anytime soon? If you've not been stably housed, how would you describe yourself? Marginally housed in an SRO? You know, those kinds of questions would have to all be teased out beforehand. But this also could be, I mean, if I was like saying like 35, let's go a little bit higher. Like this is going to be potentially like we can have a really big numbers, which I'm sure is delightful to the ears of Crown and Kara. but it also is easy, right? Like everyone has an experience with housing of some sort. And if we just do Ryan White, that's almost too open, but still, that's still Ryan White. That could be anyone who's a Ryan White client. Or if we want to do, like I said, something that's more focused on those who are the most challenged our special pops and our severe need folks. We could do centers of excellence only. So I think that's a very intriguing idea, Derek, that I'd love this committee to consider for our target next year. Again, it's not up to for us to decide, but I think that's, it's almost, and we could look at these five or so folks as almost like our preliminary, our pilot.
And I was going to say, I'm sure that all the agencies that have housing services were reached out to, like Catholic Charities and SFAF that does subsidies and all that.
Not necessarily, because those places are going to be hard for people to want to talk about their experience with doing eviction. Mm-hmm. I think that's where like the challenges are, like, but this is my housing provider. I'm not sure I want, but if we have something more like a more general, like what are your housing, we actually might be able to get even more data on like people who have experienced eviction, you know, even if they're still currently housed by Catholic Charities, a Catholic Charities administered program. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not so much for this one, but I could see that for the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Derek. Thanks, Mark. Thanks everyone, Maria. That's about it for Kohler and needs assessment, Kira. All righty. So with that, if there's nothing else, our next meeting date and agenda, our next meeting date is on November 1st. Everyone good?
Right after Halloween. I'm just kidding.
I have to jump over to a 2-hour, 45-minute African studies class, ancient Egypt.
Okay. Have fun.
Everyone, I'll see you all in the online universe down the line. Have a great day.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.